Ed. My heart was racing, and and ever since then, I've been trying to get back to that because there was a real peacefulness about it. There was a almost a divine essence about it, and it, and I've been trying to get back to that for the longest time. I've dealt with the fear. I've dealt with the actual thing itself. And it's okay with me, only it just hasn't happened again. I was wondering if there was anything you might recommend as far as exercises or preparation.
No, I think you're asking the person who wouldn't advise you to try again unless it happens spontaneously. That's all right. You had the experience. It is real. It's genuine.
I feel there's a lot of knowledge there, too.
Yes. You know, sometimes knowledge doesn't mean we should go there and look around. I think we have to ground ourselves. Maybe that's why the good Lord sees to it not too many people get out there. I tell you why sometimes I say there's dangers. I've seen people who, if they do it too often, once, twice, or half a dozen even, it's perfectly all right. But people who do that, slip away too quickly out of their body, someone else on the other side can slip into their own body.
Do you have any experience of someone, like, would that be a total shift of, in personality, I would guess?
That's correct.
Have you ran across anyone like that?
Yes, yes. I've got people who've told me what happened. And one of them is a well-known person who goes around lecturing on this. And she used to slide out of her body and had fun in two, three different ways. And then she said, I was out of it. She came in to get in. She said, I saw three hooded people deciding which one of them are going to get in. And she was told...
Three what kind of people?
Hooded people, you know, astral entities they were. And they were trying to get into her body, just take it over. And since then, she hasn't tried to get out of her body. The other thing is sometimes people may get out of their bodies if they're doing too frequently. I don't mean once or twice, as I said, or half a dozen times, it's all right, because there isn't too much time. But people who, one time I was lecturing, and the person next to me said to me, Dr. Caragula, how can I stay in my body? I said, what do you mean? She said, well, I walk down the steps, I'm out of my body. So if a person is driving... What happens to them? Suddenly they're out somewhere else. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
Everybody goes out of their body but me.
You better stick in your body, but don't get out. There are dangers. It's a true experience. It's a genuine experience. It's a phenomenon that people eventually will be able to have that experience without leaving disconnected from their body. That you are really actually connected with it, like an umbilical cord. Mm-hmm. If there was somebody was there, they would see you connected via the solar plexus. Did you do anything at the time when before you left out to your outside your body?
It happened to me, like I said, when I was sleeping.
Oh, I see.
And I was aware of that through the Open Mind program and through the Anderson Foundation.
Yeah.
I was talking with Andy Anderson over there.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it's always good to say a little blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And just in case you might slip out of your body, that this is taken and there's no intruders, please. and that's what I've been doing all the time.
Yeah, just be grateful. You had the experience. It is a genuine experience. People get a sense of reality that our physical body, the death body, is not all that we are.
No, absolutely.
And therefore, that's, I think, the value of the experience. And I think accept that and go ahead and do the rest of your work without having to look back. If it happens another time, fine, but don't push it.
If you're concerned about it, you might check with the folks at the Monroe Institute because they are concerned that it's a safe trip and journey for you if you need to take it at all.
Bill,
yes.
The Monroe Institute, do they have any literature or tapes that prepare you to do it?
Done a great deal of research on it in a very, very scientific way. And
but actual exercises that you can do to see
if you
can...
Yes, if you check them, I think you'll find a lot of information on the pros and cons of it.
I see. Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah. Glad to have you aboard. We have Dan here. Dan, welcome
in. Hello. Doctor, I have a question for you. I'd like to know what your experience, your personal experience is with out-of-body experiences.
None at all. I'm grateful I don't have any of them.
Okay. I'm a little bit, you might say, perturbed that, I don't want to exaggerate, but like you're scaring half of Los Angeles that to go out of the body is going to be a very dangerous thing.
Well, because...
I personally have experienced out-of-body experiences. And I have a friend who has been doing this. In fact, he was a natural psychic, very sensitive, and he just happened to get into remote viewing and going out of his body at a very, very young age, already before he was 10 years old. And he's been doing it off and on for many, many years, and he can see auras, etc. cetera. He's a psychic, et cetera. He's not known as a psychic. He doesn't even go around talking about his abilities. But I trust his information because all the information he's passed on to me has been verified and recrossed, and I've done a lot of research on my own. And I talked to him. I asked him about this thing. People were talking about silver cords and dangers. And he mentioned this, and he said that all the times that he's gone out, he's never seen the silver cord that people have talked about. He never saw this.
It is there.
Okay, and...
It's like a baby. You know how when a baby is born, has a cord connected with his mother?
I'm very familiar with the subject, about the silver cord. He himself said he had never seen this cord. He investigated himself. And he primarily felt that what these people were talking about as far as cords was, you might say, a string of tension. Because most people that Google out-of-body, like the previous caller, mentioned about a fear that was going on with out-of-body experience because they're not comprehending what's happening. And he noticed that often in the first once or twice that people do go out-of-body, there seems to be like a cord of energy that follows the body because of tension. But he noticed that with increased, repeated, experiences, this cord disappeared very quickly. And he himself is very familiar with that because, like you said yourself, when people go out of body, they meet other people that have this ability. And he has had no experience of general danger of people leaving the body. I've asked him about this, and he's never mentioned anything like that. And I personally have experience with this, and I've never felt any type of danger.
Well, maybe you haven't yourself, but being a physician, and I get people who are in trouble. And maybe that's why I see also the other side of the story. And as a physician and a researcher in this field, it's part of my duty to refer to the dangers that take place in these aspects. So you can take it or leave it. You do what you like. But
you're taking the fun away from it, Dr.
Farrell. I'm just concerned about that because, Bill's also from the Monroe Institute.
I know, but it's dangerous.
I disagree very strongly,
that's
and personally,
fine.
I've had the experience myself a number of times.
That's perfectly all right. I have also the right to disagree.
Oh no, absolutely. But I just want to make the point that what I'm talking about from personal experience.
That's wonderful.
And,
that's all right.
I just want to present the other side because I think Los Angeles would have a great time going out of body. Because my friend, I can sit down to him. He doesn't do this very often, but in good moods, I can talk to him about other planets and the people on other planets. And I think a lot of people would like to be able to do that on their own. And I just don't want to scare people preemptively.
Well, Dan, from what I can understand from talking to so many people, that they're going to have a traffic cop above Los Angeles.
You better believe it, Bill. You better believe it.
I'm going to take Dr. Caragula with me when I go.
Yeah.
And we'll tread very lightly on the other side.
I just like to put one last comment on there. It has to do with a lot of, I feel these dangers that you might be mentioning, is that there's a lot of fear built up in not just out-of-body experiences, but anything psychic. I mean, imagine seeing a ghost. I mean, most people that would see a ghost would really get scared. And the basis is this whole concept of out-of-body experiences, a major shift in reality. Our entire world is based on that this does not happen. And when this happens, a lot of fear, powerful fear comes up. And I think, fear weakens people. And I think energy systems, just like you've been talking about, and that possibly might induce people to fear that these kind of things can happen. But I really don't think that with experience and a lot of information.
Have you seen people who are troubled?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Have you been in contact with people who have had troubles with these experiences?
No.
Well, right then. That's all right.
But Dr. Caragula has.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody have a very nice night.
That's right.
All right, Dan. Thank you very much for your input. We appreciated it. It's Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me, Dr. Shafika Caragula. We're talking about, your extended perception abilities and how you can gain them.
Okay.
And some people feel they can gain them going out of body a little bit, mm-hmm. Dr. Caragula. We'll be back in just a moment. Shafika Caragula is with me. And I certainly hope you get both of her books. They're must reading for you. Breakthroughs in Creativity and Through the Curtain. We're talking about Through the Curtain tonight and way up in Northern California. You made it. Are we coming in up there, Greg?
Very poorly.
Very poorly.
Very poorly. Hi, Bill.
How are you doing?
Dr. Caragula. I'd like to talk to you about the state of research and just the general approach to the kinds of things you've been talking about tonight in other countries around the world in comparison with here in the United States, because, you know, 90%+ of what we hear about in this country just pertains to what's happening here and to the way people approach things in this country. We do get to hear probably about 8% of what we hear, or maybe something like that, is about what's happening in the Soviet Union, and we hear almost nothing about the rest of the world. And I suspect that you're probably in contact with people around the world. If I recall correctly from reading Breakthrough in Creativity, you're originally from Pakistan, is that right?
What?
I said, if I recall correctly from reading mm-hmm. Breakthrough to Creativity, you're originally from Pakistan, is that right?
Where? That's...
Pakistan.
No. I come from Beirut, Lebanon, from Turkey.
Oh, okay, well...
No, Pakistan, I've never seen it.
Okay. Well, it's a long time since I've read the
book. I'm so glad you're here instead of Beirut.
Yes. I've got a lot of friends there. I pray for them.
But before you get into that, I just want to make an observation. I think... And I'm not a chauvinist, believe me. Mm-hmm. It seems that probably the United States of this day is one of the more ideal places, because we have a very commonsensical, pragmatic approach to things. If you look at other countries, you might superficially think that a place such as India, for instance, might be very conducive to studying these things. And I'd really like your comments and observations on it. But also, at the same time, people there have to deal with, ages-old traditions that really shape their thinking.
Well, I think if you want to know what other research is being done around the world...
Then how does it compare with the way we approach things here in this country?
Well, I tell you, I was in India one time. I went down to the neurophysiology department where they were studying yogis. And they were trying to study physiologically, neurologically, and they had excellent men who knew their business. They were studying how does a yogi, for instance, can control his breathing and can be buried for a day or 2 days and then come out.
Right.
They are very good in those kind of things. And the Indian, there are two groups. There are those who are very simple, but the brilliant among them are really brilliant.
Uh-huh.
They compare anywhere in the world. And I think there are research... depending sometimes on the funds that are available. Russia is doing a great deal of work, I know, because some of them have been desperate. They've been asking for Breakthrough to Creativity for 2 years. I wouldn't send it. Until I said, to heck, let them have it.
They're going to get it anyway. They'll send a KGB agent over to the Bodhi tree.
That's correct. He wanted a free copy. What was interesting, it was in one of their... center. There's on the eastern side, it's in the center of Russia where they have a whole city. I didn't know about it. They have a whole city. Top-notch scientists. All of them are in this city, surrounded, they're isolated from everybody, and the guy was from that department somewhere there.
That is a very difficult city to get into.
That's correct.
No,
and he wanted it to be registered to be sure he was going to get the book. Maybe I should try it and ask him for a copy of what he's done.
You won't get anything.
I don't get anything, so, but I... Eventually they could figure it out. But in England, they're doing some good work. And I think in Canada, they have done some work. There are different groups of people doing different kinds of research. And remember, this has started over 200 years ago. We're not the only ones beginning.
I know that.
To whet your appetite a little bit more, Keith Harari, who wrote the book The Mind Race, along with Russell Targ,
yes,
will be my guest 2 weeks from tonight, so mm-hmm. he'll get into that very, very closely with you.
They did a good job.
Yes.
I just got the book, and I think it's interesting. All these other abilities are being reported more, but I hope that we do not lay our emphasis on the military application. We must apply it to the human being, and I think the next great field that should be of help is in medicine, preventive medicine, and predictive medicine. That's my interest in these abilities and to understand man himself.
Well, you know what's really incredible about living in the age we're in right now is, as you say, the types of research that lead to our current understanding began at least 200 years ago. But then, of course, people have been dealing with these things for thousands of years.
That's correct.
And they in previous times, they were looked at through more of a magical or mystical perspective. To a large extent.
To the outer world, but there has always been for centuries an inner group from you who were aware and who go to night classes, as you will find in Through the Curtain, the book, where students go in and learn these things and can bring the memory to full waking consciousness and begin to have a reality to them and apply it. So I think these things have been known. And if you go to throughout the world, and I've made a trip around the world with this in mind, you find paintings go back to thousands of years, indicating these abilities, whether they are a Hindu or a Buddhist or a Christian.
Craig, you ever had the feeling you've been to night classes?
Nothing that clearly defined.
Wait till it happens.
Well, let me just say, do you sometimes pick up a book and you suddenly it sounds familiar to you?
Oh, sure.
All right, maybe you've been there, you can't bring it through, you'll find out, maybe you have been there.
Well, one thing I was going to say is that I remember very clearly from when I was younger and going to school, if I had some kind of problem, say a math or geometry type problem, something like that, or could be any sort really, and if I was thinking about it, I could just know that if I was thinking about it when I went to bed,
mm-hmm.
I'd be pretty sure of having better understanding of it when I woke up.
Well, where do you get those ideas? There must be somewhere we go to get knowledge or maybe exchange points of view and get some help and come back with the concepts. I know a number of inventors have those things. I know people in the fashion industry. They go to sometimes and come bring in some... Well, what's coming? Precognition. It's a kind of precognition. They come in with new concepts. The physicists have a lot of these things.
Most physicists do.
And I have known one Nobel Prize laureate who told me exactly how he got his ideas. So these things are not as strange as they seem.
I don't know. I want to ask you one more specific question quickly. Are you familiar with what we call the dream time experience of the Aboriginal people in Australia?
I don't know about that. I'd probably explain it on my understand, but I cannot.
Well, okay, the Aboriginal people in Australia, their civilization is known to extend back roughly 50,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
They have what we hear in Western civilization call the dream time.
Mm-hmm.
And to them, it's an alternate state of reality, which they can go into, and it's just as real, and it's equivalent in the full sense of the word to ordinary everyday reality.
Mm-hmm.
And they gain a lot of knowledge from this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important to the whole way they conduct their lives.
Sounds like they're going to day school.
Day school. I'm not familiar with that group of people.
It really seems to tie into the kind of research.
I appreciate
you do.
Your mentioning it.
We'll have to look further into that, Greg.
Okay, thank you. A whole lot. I want to ask you, are you ever going to have the astronaut?
Ed Mitchell.
Yeah, Ed Mitchell.
I'm making plans to have Ed on in about November.
Okay.
He's in Europe right now, but he's one of my favorite people.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you very much, Craig. I'm Bill Jenkins. Dr. Safika Karagula is with me tonight. It's Open Mind. Right after the news at midnight, one of our favorite people, Barbara Estenson, will be here. Barbara.
Good evening. It's good to see you again. I missed you a couple weeks ago.
Oh, listen, I was having fun.
I know. I told our audience that you were having an out-of-studio experience.
An out-of-studio experience.
Oh.
I got get-well cards. I got cards that said we heard you'd been in an accident.
No, that just sort of came to me. That somehow that seemed appropriate for you to be having an out-of-studio experience. Someone had asked me.
I heard you did that.
Oh, did you hear that? Someone who exercises, I go to the Sports Connection, and I'll lay you exercises there, and I'm going to talk with her more about it. She uses out-of-body experiences and can have them at will with her weight reduction program. She was about 150 pounds overweight, very obese, and I was just leaving, and she was just getting there. And she had heard me say this about you on the air, and she said, well, I have to tell you, you were joking about it. But she said, I have really learned how to use my out-of-body experiences to help me with my weight reduction. I'm going to have to ask her about that, what that means.
Yeah, tell her. I'll find out how she does it.
I don't know.
Dr. Karagula
maybe
says
we have a whole
probably
new
shouldn't
thing.
Do it, but I'm going to anyway, if I can.
Well,
she's probably been mediumistic in another life. It's easy for her to get out.
could that be? Yeah. Well, she's already lost a whole person just about. She's lost 100 pounds. She has 15 more to go.
Of course, when you go out of body, you lose almost everything.
That's right. Well, maybe that's why she's losing weight.
What's on tap time?
Oh, well, the first couple of hours, we're going to have a psychologist in studio. His name is Brett Lyon, and he's developed a method of harnessing your own power. And he says you can gently guide yourself in the direction you want to go. It has to do with a lot of relaxation. And interestingly enough, he started out helping actors with lines and so on and relaxing beforehand, and that's now translated to the public in general. So we're going to find out a bit how to do that. And then the 2 o'clock hour, an old friend of ours, Alan Lieberhoff, he's been on my guest on my show before, and he's going to talk about starting your own business at home. He's very interested in cottage industry, so going to be an interesting 5 hours.
Hmm. 5 hours.
Yes.
Yeah, but you make every one of them fascinating, Barbara.
Oh.
Keep me up every night.
Well, I'm glad we're having an in-studio experience.
An in-studio experience, Doc.
Thank you, William.
All right. Thank you very much, Barb. She'll be on right after the news at midnight. And we are going to go to Brad is there. Hello, Brad.
Hello, Bill.
Yes.
Hi. The doctor mentioned Ingo Swann earlier on in the program.
Mm-hmm.
And I received something in the mail a little while back. And he's giving a seminar up in Santa Barbara. And I have met Ingo. And as far as the dangers and such of out-of-body experiences and connected with various psychic phenomena, I know he's one that that does not really have much trouble in that area. And experiences I've had...
You're being challenged on this,
but
Dr. Kent.
Ingo doesn't leave his body in perceiving.
He does remote viewing, but...
Remote viewing doesn't mean you're out of your body.
Yes, but he has also had out-of-body experiences.
He might
well.
Have had, but I have talked to Ingo, and these are other types of abilities. There are people who can focus their mind and perceive without getting out of their body.
That's
a different ability, and that's perfectly safe.
Okay, has he said nothing to you about out-of-body experiences?
I think I don't recall now, but I remember discussing how he did his abilities, some of his abilities. And I think he does some of his remote viewing without getting out of his body.
Right. One of the points, though, that I wanted to bring up is that since you did mention it yourself, but it's since you are a doctor, you do see people that have trouble. But... Might you not be able to assume that people that do not have trouble don't go to the doctor, so you don't know how many people are not having trouble.
There may be a lot of people who are not in trouble, but I think once you know the physics, like the connections can get loose. If people do it once or twice or three times, as I said, it's all right. It's not.
Well, that's still an assumption based on the people you have seen.
Yes, but I think also there has been throughout history, when you tear things apart too often, you get problems. I think from the physics point of view, this is so.
Right.
So you can do what you like. God will bless you for getting out there, and I hope you come back safe with your own body, but I don't want you to get into trouble.
I get into most of my trouble in the body.
You may have worse outside your body.
We might be better off roaming around just out of it a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, Brad.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Let me see. I believe we have Jeffrey on the line. Hi, Jeffrey.
Oh, finally. I almost got chatted right out of the hour. Anyway, I wanted to ask the guest, what happens when a person has spent a lot of time in the spiritual world, especially through childhood, and now he has to start coping with the physical world? Is it a lot harder to cope toward the direction of density than toward the direction of spirituality, as most people are?
But you mean by the spirit world, you're aware of that dimension physically with your eyes?
Well, a person is aware of the spiritual world, and then all of a sudden, because of a mental illness, and then he's getting well, and he suddenly has to cope with the physical world. Is that a lot harder in this direction than in the usual direction of experiencing the physical world than the spiritual world?
No, I think it's better to remain in your body and be aware and study those other aspects.
All right, Jeffrey, wish we could...
So it's all abreast.
I guess we could get into it further, but we just ran out of time. Yeah.
Can we read a poem?
We just ran out of time to read the poem. We're going to have you back. Will you come see us
sure,
and read the poem?
All right.
And get the book, would you? Through the curtain. And you'll love it. And thank you, Dr. Caragula, for being with us.
Gee, I'm so glad the station doesn't have enough money to make a regular kind of introduction for me. Well, a very good Sunday morning, and may I be the very first to wish all the daddies out there a most happy Father's Day. It is 7 minutes past the witching hour on this Sunday, June the 17th. All kinds of things happening today. It, of course, is Father's Day. It's Elmer Dill's birthday. So those of you calling in a little later today can wish Elmer happy birthday. And it's also my daughter Dina's graduation later today from UCLA. And I am, as the little piece of tape indicated from my friend Chuck Walsh, I am Barbara Essenston. You know, I'm never sure whether all this personal talk up front sounds provincial or more just like family. I'm opting for the latter. At any rate, I hope this day is special for each and every one of you. While cleaning out my garage recently, I found a piece that I wrote about my father on Father's Day, and unfortunately there wasn't a date on there, but whenever I had Mrs. Ruth as a teacher, I think I had her in the fourth grade, so that makes me about 9 years old. It was a Father's Day piece that I wrote, and I thought that I would read it for you this morning. My dad taught me how to play baseball and how to turn cartwheels while always keeping my legs straight. That was very important. My dad now takes me on two streetcars to my piano lessons on Saturday mornings. He says he doesn't like to take me, but he never lets anyone else do it. My dad says he thought I was going to be a boy, but it's all right that I'm a girl, but he still calls me Bobby. My dad gets mad when I don't get all A's on my report card. He says that's because he knows I'm smart and can do it, but I think it's really because he never finished school, and he just wants me to be smart. My dad says men don't cry because they are strong, but I saw him cry while he was watching Lassie on television. I get mad at my dad sometimes because he's so strict, but I guess that's just because he loves me. Well, this is the first Father's Day that I am without my dad, so it seemed kind of important for me to share that with you. Also important are some subjects that we're going to be tackling tonight. This is going to be a feel-good time for the next 5 hours, and I don't know whether it's by design, or Bill Jenkins would say a sort of karma or something like that, but it seems to me every evening or every early morning, the early morning of a holiday, like Mother's Day or Father's Day or Easter, I always have a feel-good show. And I don't know, as I say, I don't know whether it's by design or whether it just sort of works out that way, but this will be another one of those mornings. How to get where you want to go faster with less effort, how to make money and make money at home. In our first hour, psychologist Brett Lyon is in studio. Now, he's developed a method of harnessing your own power and gently guiding yourself in the direction that you want to go. In our 2 o'clock hour, an old friend of ours will be with us, Alan Lieberoff. He's not an old friend. He's just an old friend of ours. He's been a guest on this show before, and he's written a book on how to make a fortune at home, and it's all legal. Those subjects and a lot more we're going to be tackling this June morn for the next 5 hours. If you'd like to participate, if you'd like to get in line, to get on the line, here's how you do it. In Los Angeles, he claims he can make productivity a pleasure, and he cleverly has entitled his program The Lyon Method. Respectfully, Dr. Lyon, I grew up with the notion that if it doesn't hurt, if it isn't really tough, well, it's just not worth getting there.
Right. If the castor oil didn't taste bad, it wouldn't be good.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Nothing should be sugar-coated or should be easy. So when I read this, it said, you know, that productivity could be pleasurable. Mm-hmm. Pleasurable.
Pleasurable, yes.
I think even that notion maybe is difficult for folks to grab onto.
Yeah, it's very difficult, and I specifically used that as my opening because I wanted to shock people and get them to think a little differently. But a lot of the American system around, you know, if at first you don't succeed, try again.
Exactly.
And if it doesn't hurt, it's not good for you.
Yeah.
My thing is, if at first you don't succeed, you know, maybe you're going the wrong direction.
Uh-huh.
I'll just give you a couple of examples. I've been in theater, and when I used to try to get directing work, I was in New York looking for directing work, and I couldn't get it. And I was working and working to get it. And it was only years later that I realized I was never going to the right places. On the other hand, whenever I went for a teaching job, there was no problem at all. Because that's what I loved doing. It was very easy for me. My instincts were there, my impulses were there, and I just went right to it.
Now, did that mean that you really weren't a good director and you were a good teacher? Or did it just mean that you were more at ease, felt more comfortable looking for those kinds of jobs?
It meant that I am a good director. I do nice directing work, but it's not my real love. It's not what really pushes me, what really motivates me, what really pulls me, if I want to use that. It's something that I got stuck in. I thought I should be doing a certain thing. That's the castor oil again.
Boy, does that sound familiar.
Doesn't that, you know, this is what I think I should be doing. This is what my parents told me to do, or this is what somebody told me to do, or after all, this is what you do when you're really successful.
You know, my dad said to me, although I think he was proud of my being in radio, but he always thought I was going to go to law school and do some other things with my life, and I can remember hearing him not that long ago say, well, at the moment... Bobby, as he called me, is in radio, but it's always
at the moment,
you know, when she grows up, maybe she'll do something productive.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and for your example with law school, you get another father whose daughter wants to go to law school, and he'd like her to be in radio.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it doesn't really matter. People have attitudes, and I think the greatest gift you can give your father or your mother is not to take them too seriously.
When we first talked about your being on the show, and I get lots of mail and lots of literature and so on, and I, quite frankly, at first I just sort of put this aside and I said, well, it's another S.
Another one of those.
It's another self-improvement. Yeah. I don't mean to insult anyone who's gone through S and it's done good things for them, but there are a lot of things like that out there, like S and LifeSpring and so on. How do your methods differ from those kinds of methods for self-improvement?
Well, it's really a totally different thing, and it always surprises me. I gave a lecture, and I asked for questions afterward at one point, and first question was, have you ever done EST, which I never have, but it was something around my language that sounded similar. Actually, all this evolved. This is an example of what I mean by getting more done by doing less and by following kind of a course of least resistance. I basically started out teaching acting, and I was an acting teacher, and I developed a whole method to help actors be more spontaneous, be freer, better vocal range, the kind of things that actors need, okay? And then I found that it was causing all these other changes. So first I went public as a voice teacher, and again, in my voice classes, I started finding not only were people's voices changing, they were changing jobs, they were changing careers, people were going back to school and doing what they really wanted to, people were getting out of relationships that were stuck and getting into better ones, and so I changed my advertising. Mm-hmm. So actually, I had the method before I had the advertising. I've been looking for the last 4 or 5 years for the advertising that really explains what I do.
What you do. Well, I guess maybe that's why it was hard for me to get a handle on it, but the more I talked with you and the more you explained to me, in fact, we're going to do a little exercise on the air so we can give folks an idea, the more that I could see that your method would be applicable, obviously, not just to actors or not just to salespeople and so on, but it's something that you can take with you and use every day. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break now. I am Barbara Essenston in studio. Do you need to know stuff about me? I know you've been sitting here observing me.
No, let me tell you just a little more before I do that, because I think it's important in terms of what you asked about how my work differs.
Right.
My work is basically different from just about anybody else's in that I put a lot of different things together. And I work starting on a body level. My work is not about changing your mind and then your body changes, which is very, very oversimplified, but what EST and LifeSpring and things like that
are
about.
And I think that's the most common kind of way one
hears
about it.
That's the way people hear about it and think about it. My work is quite the opposite, that if the physical starts to change, inevitably your physical will change, your emotional life will change, and ultimately your behavior will change. And that's really what I work with. I work on changing the physical being. And I work with body awareness, very gentle movements with the body, which obviously we can't demonstrate on the radio.
Mm-mm.
And I work with...
Not unless we get real close to the microphone.
Real close to the mic, okay. And I work with breathing, and I work with vocalizing, allowing sound to come up. And I work with the principle, again, of allowing rather than doing, rather than forcing, rather than planning and figuring like we mostly do. We figure, we plan something, and then we worry about it. That's the American way.
That's right,
you know?
Absolutely.
You figure it out, you plan it, then you worry a lot, then you maybe do it if you're lucky with a lot of effort, and then you worry that maybe you did it wrong.
But sometimes you just worry so much you become paralyzed and you don't do it at all.
Exactly. Yeah. And my idea is you allow things to happen and then you discover what they are. And then you find out, gee, I'm doing this. I'm always finding a teaching job, just to use myself again.
Mm-hmm.
I always find teaching jobs. Somehow I'm always teaching. Maybe that's because that's what I really like to do.
Mm.
And beginning to understand that, okay? Now, I work starting on a physical level. That's the least threatening. But that change starts manifesting on all levels. And that's why my work is real different from any other work that I know of. It puts together different things.
But it can be used not only... I can understand where what you're talking about can be used really effectively with actors, with people in radio, with people who have to do public speaking and so on. But you're talking about... homemakers. You're talking about any one of us.
I've had them all.
You've had them all.
In all the classes. I have my age range. I go from 17. I have a guy in the class who's been in for a couple of months now. He's 76 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And his comment is each week, he says, each week I get a little more jarred loose.
That's good.
Jarred loose. And he's a wonderful guy.
Well, I sure hope when I'm 76, I still want to be jarred loose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it really is not at all limited. It works for anyone. What I work on is, okay, I work on performance on one level.
Mm-hmm.
But not only do I work on people who are performing in what you think of as performing, radio, television. There are most of us, when we go home and shut the door at night, unfortunately, we're still performing. We still have these little voices in our head that are say things like, oh, you shouldn't have done that today. Oh, you should do this now. Mm-hmm. Oh, you can't cry. You got to be brave if you feel sad, or you can't get angry, or whatever it is. Not only can't we do that in public, we can't even do it in private. And those little voices just keep going. And my work is about getting those voices to shut up, getting in touch with what you want, with what's inside of you,
mm-hmm.
and not worrying so much about what's out there. And that has universal appeal.
Mm.
Again, I didn't know this. These are all discoveries I made. There's none of this that I planned. It all got discovered. I started with actors. I had some non-actors, and I saw the kind of changes they went through. I brought it to the public as a voice training. I started seeing that instead of just voice work, everything started changing for people. And so I geared around that. So I'm a good model of following this path of least
mm-hmm.
resistance and really allowing things to happen and doing, getting more done by doing less.
I think that I really enjoy radio. I really feel good about doing radio. I have never had a trouble getting a job in radio.
Mm-hmm.
And yet,
you had a heck of a time in law school.
And yeah, right. I probably would have had a difficult time in law school. And yet I still hear those voices, and they don't
mm-hmm.
feel so little. They feel real big and strong,
mm-hmm.
saying, yeah, but you should be doing this. You should
right.
be doing that. You should be doing all different
right.
kinds of things. Okay, I want to get rid of some of those voices.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where does one start? Can we do a quick exercise?
Yes, let's do something on the air, and we'll do it in terms of sounding, and we'll just see what happens with it.
Okay.
And it'll be interesting because people are going to hear the sounds, so we'll
okay,
do it.
Okay, you shouldn't get nervous when you hear some strange sounds,
don't get
right?
nervous when you hear noises,
okay.
right. And also it may have some effect on your voice, and we'll see about that, your actual physical voice.
Okay.
So just...
My program director would love that if you could bring my voice down a notch.
We can do that.
Okay, good.
Just close your eyes and,
mm-hmm.
and get comfortable as you can sitting
mm-hmm.
there. Okay, and just... think of your body as just very open, very spacious. And let your jaw go. Just let it go. And there's a lot of air that just comes in and goes out without any effort. And you let the air come in and go out, and you just feel the breath supporting you. You don't have to do anything. It takes care of you. And then deep down inside, I want you to see a pool of vibrations, any color, and you can feel them or hear them or see them. Just let the breath drop in deep inside you. It fills you up. It touches these vibrations. They start to move around, and they come up and out. And the sound is going to come out, just an easy sigh of relief. Since we're doing a kind of quick demo, just kind of imitate me a little. That's right, that's right. Let it come through your nose and your mouth. That's it, even more through your nose. Couple more times. That's. Okay. And just let it fade out. That's right. And when you're ready, just let your eyes open slowly. How do you feel?
I feel very relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, do I feel relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good night, folks. What's interesting is I pictured a really deep blue pool.
Mm-hmm.
When you said vibrations,
mm-hmm.
the screener's shaking his head. You did the exercise, too? It was very blue and very cool, and it was almost as if when I took a breath in, it was would be like throwing a pebble in the center
fantastic.
Of a pool,
yeah.
And it would vibrate out.
Mm-hmm.
That's very nice.
That's great, and the blue is a, well, it can mean a lot of things. Blue can relate to power. Blue is also around relaxation, and it's a cool color, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll look inside, and the vibrations will be very hot. They'll be red, or they'll be orange. And sometimes people get images of fire, different kind of. And when you do it again, you might get a very
different kind of image.
Mm-hmm. And the sound that came out would then be quite different.
Mm-hmm.
And even the feeling you got, it might not be so much relaxation. It might be something quite else.
Interesting. No, I definitely felt relaxed and felt. Now is my voice more modulated? I'm just so aware of that. I may be doing a trip on myself, but that is a wonderfully relaxing exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that do long term if one practices this?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you did it. I mean, because people weren't watching and couldn't really see, I just had you do it for just about a minute. I don't think it was a full minute, probably a full minute. Now, if you kept doing it, just like right here, just now, if you kept doing it for like 5, 10, 15 minutes, a lot of things would start happening just in this sequence here. I mean, just for like 15 minutes of it. And different kinds of sounds would start coming out all by themselves. In other words, you wouldn't plan them. They would take over. It's like your inner self would just take over and begin to allow sounds to come out.
And what do those sounds mean? I mean, as they come out?
Mm-hmm. Well, they give you a tremendous sense, as you said, of relaxation. They also give you a tremendous sense of freedom because it's a way of dropping all that thinking while you were doing, during your minute.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do a lot of worry?
No.
Did you hear all those voices?
No.
No, it's something else. You go to a different place. It's related to meditation, but it's not exactly that. You're letting those sounds come out, and it allows you to feel freer, and it allows you to get more happening. If you continued, okay, if you practiced it, if you did it every day, which I recommend, you would find, first of all, your voice would tend to drop. It would get a little lower. Your face would tend to let go.
Mm-hmm.
So any lines or holding in your face would begin
would
to let go. Plus, you would start behaving in a freer way. You might actually, this may sound a little extreme, but if you did, well, let me put it this way. If you continued with this work, you would get into probably some emotional stuff. You seem to be pretty receptive, and my guess is you'd get into some crying because there's some tears around your eyes and stuff.
I got buttons all over there.
Yeah. You'd get into some of that stuff. That would start coming out. And when that began to be released, some of those voices would really be gone, and you would say, my God, I'm doing the radio. It's what I love to do. I've always done it. And you just feel wonderful about it.
And it feels good feeling wonderful about it.
Yeah. That would be one thing that would happen.
Okay, we got tons of people that want to talk with you.
Really?
But first, we're going to have to take care of just a little bit of business, and we'll be right back.
If I will.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi, Scotty. How are you doing?
Hey, good.
That's good. Why are you up so late?
Can't go to sleep.
Oh, you can't. Well, I'm glad you're listening to this station if you can't go to sleep. What can we do for you?
Yeah, how could, if work isn't hard, how could you appreciate what you get out of it?
Interesting question. What sports do you enjoy?
Well, I enjoy running, but I just took up swimming now.
Uh-huh. Do you have to work hard at running to enjoy it?
Yeah. Well, not really. I could just relax and
that's right.
do it, except, like, if I just get a really good time or something and I don't work hard for it, it doesn't feel as good as if I work hard for it.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, you have already, how old are you?
I'm 12 years old.
12. Okay, you've already got the American thing of it's gotta be hard. It's good you feel good about working hard and accomplishing something. That's great. There's also just the sense of joy of doing it.
Yeah.
You know, if you enjoy running, and you run, sometimes it's nice to get a good time. Sometimes it's nice just to go out and run, isn't it?
Yeah, like I feel the process of training is most of the fun.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you're really gearing up for a result, it'll be a big letdown.
Yeah.
Because the result isn't really what it's about. It's about the process.
Yeah.
But what Scott is saying is exactly what I was saying at the beginning of the show, that I was always taught that if it isn't tough, if you don't really have to work for it, then it can't really be worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
And what the doctor is saying is that we sure don't enjoy, we miss out on a lot of enjoyment.
We don't really need, would you need, to, does it need to be rough in order for you to run?
No, but like, as I've heard before, how could you appreciate life without death?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll put it this way, or from my being a little bit older than you, there is something about dealing with death that helps you appreciate life, but you can darn well appreciate it without it, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe it adds a little extra fillip or an extra philosophical edge. But it's the same thing with the sports. It may give you a little added benefit to have this pressure to, you know, to get a good time and to work hard. But there's also, I think, even a greater joy in just going out there and doing it.
Yeah.
Just going out there and living. What else do you enjoy? What else do you really like doing?
I collect stamps.
Uh-huh. Do you have to work hard at that?
No, I just enjoy it.
Yeah. What else?
See, I'll play the piano.
Uh-huh. You work hard at that?
No, just relax when I'm playing.
Anything else?
Flute. I play the flute. Uh-huh. I play the violin.
How about school?
I do pretty good in school.
Do you like school?
Well, I don't like school, but I like the results I get out of it.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's what I'm talking about. You got it. Okay? You like playing the flute, you like running, you like playing the piano, but the thing you like about school is the results.
Yeah.
Now, I would like to see a system where you liked the school and you didn't care much about the results. That's what I would like to see. That's not what you've got.
That's almost heresy.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, well, I was a real good student, and I was always working for those results.
Mm-hmm.
And I really understand where God is coming from.
Yeah, no, I do, too. The results were all important, and I look back now and remember all the time I spent memorizing dates instead of...